Good morning, and thank you for joining us on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and you know what? I'm going to guarantee you an amazing show today. I don't know how I know it, but I just know this show is going to be great. We've been talking backstage before the show, and it's already been a lot of interesting conversation. So I know we're just going to blow you away. But I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do. And that's to go ahead and share this show because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So that's right, hit that share button and let your friends know. Also, I want you to take the time to go through the post to look at the websites and the information from today's guest. They're here to help you, support you, and to bring information. So go ahead and support them. I want to introduce you to our first guest. Our first guest is Galit Sadiq. She's a certified financial education instructor. She is the CEO of her own business, Sadiq G Management, and she specializes in financial wellness coaching. Good morning, Galit. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you for having me.
You are welcome. Thank you for joining us. I love your look. Your hair's green, the shirt is green, even the window is green. Like you got this kind of ambiance going on over there. And I'm like, okay, tell us about what you do, Galit.
Yeah, so I actually call myself the financial sharktress, and I like to make money fun and approachable and easy for anyone to understand. So it's really about financial literacy and learning how to live the life that you want to live, just doing it, responsibly. You don't have to rely on magic to have a magical life.
Is that part of your brand? Like when you go out and speak, do you actually say that you don't have to rely on magic to have a magical life?
Yeah, I've learned to just be really me, authentically me. And so I'm all about like the ocean and love and a little bit of magic and a little bit of whimsy. It just makes things that much easier, especially when you're dealing with a topic as serious as money and as scary to most people as money.
Why do you feel that money is so scary for most people?
It's because we aren't taught it in schools. And the role model, we don't necessarily have really good role models when it comes to money. And people think it's a purely logical, rational thing. And they don't realize how much emotion is tied into all of our experiences around money. And it has to do with feeling secure and feeling like you are able to thrive and survive in society. And so that becomes a really tense or scary thing for most people, especially when they feel like there's a lack of resources available to them.
I know that people feel that way in general. I mean, if I'm going to generalize, but I also feel that over the last, say, 3 months, it's been especially trying because people have felt that they don't have enough money. They don't, they're what they did have or what they were relying on, they may have lost or now they have less of. What are some of the things that people can keep in mind if that's their feeling, what they're going through?
To keep staying the course, and this too shall pass. That is definitely one thing to start with, of just hold, right now we're all struggling and we can just hold it. You just have to hold on a little bit more and to know that you don't have to do a lot at a time. Just do it in really, really small steps. Try to become really, really intentional with how you spend your money and with the things that you buy. Because that's the key right now, to make sure that you've got your essentials covered, your food, shelter, things like that are important right now. Everything else is secondary. And then for the people who are still in an okay position, make sure to take care of each other because your community is one of your best resources. And if you have extra, support your local businesses. Support your local community, donate to charity, make sure that another family has food if you have food. And it all comes back around. Karma is a beautiful thing when it's used correctly. So that I think that's my biggest message. Just get really intentional and and support each other right now.
Oh, I think that's wonderful. I think that's definitely words to live by. I'm going to introduce our next guest who's going to has a different approach, not necessarily financial, but also working together. I think that's part of the magic during these times is just working together. So our next guest, Stephanie Toma, is a networking strategy coach, and she specializes in working with giving confidence to introverts. Good morning, Stephanie. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you?
I am excellent. I love your background.
Thank you. I know it's indicative of where I physically am right now. I'm in San Francisco, so no guesses there.
Is the fog like that right now?
You know, actually, the birds are chirping. You may actually hear them. I'm in my backyard right now, and the sun is starting to come out, so it's a little bit misleading.
Okay. Well, yes, but that's a wonderful message in itself. Is the birds are chirping, the sun is shining. You know, we are all doing a lot better these days. But Stephanie, when I read your bio and your focus on introverts, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Yes. So let's see. I started out as your more traditional career coach, helping people with resumes, and that being the product of my own job searches over the years of getting really well versed in what gets your foot in the door, and then coming to a point where I realized, wait, what's even more powerful than writing the perfect resume is being able to connect with people, and leverage your network, help out your network. So I'm in the business of debunking a couple of myths that introverts cannot be confident and that networking cannot be authentic, because I think at its best, networking is authentic and introverts are confident. Oftentimes people convolute confidence with extroversion. So all the time before I had created my company, people assumed that I was extroverted because I do public speaking and I'm confident walking up to strangers, but it's really confidence that I've honed over the years.
Well, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. People say that about me. People think that I'm a lot more extroverted than I am, but I'm really introverted. I'm a recluse. Like the people who know me know that I'm very reclusive. I hardly ever, even before all of this, left the house. I hardly ever went to, you know, a lot of different places. So networking is one of those things that can be difficult for me. But I know it's like a job. Like when you go to a job and you have to put on your uniform, it is something that I put on in order to be able to have the conversations necessary to be successful in my business. What are some of the strategies that you can give to people who are more introverted, who want to go out, want to be speakers, want to be successful, but don't know if they have that ability?
Yeah, so I would definitely preface by saying these skills can help you both online networking and in person. And I'd like to expand upon what we were talking about with the first speaker, which is these sort of holistic ways of viewing business, of viewing life. I think that especially as we shelter in place and people's workspace becomes their home space, you know, and vice versa, there will be more and more of this shift towards lessening the divide between the personal and the professional. So there are three basic layers that I work with. So there's the surface layer, and that is networking and human connection. Below that level is confidence building and feeling great about yourself as the basis for being able to connect with people. And then below the surface of that is reducing anxiety to be able to feel the confidence. So focusing on anxiety reduction as a root cause that can keep us from being our most confident and connected self. Recommendations that I have that I go into more detail in my book, Confident Introvert, that comes out this month is I really appreciate unplugging and connecting with nature as much as possible. And I know right now it can seem a little bit harder than it previously felt. You know, if anyone's ever felt Zoom fatigue or event fatigue, it's very real. So one of the antidotes to that is called the solitude sandwich. And what that looks like is let's say peanut butter filling is the activity, and each piece of bread on either end is the solitude. So I highly recommend for anyone who gets their energy from solitude, that's what an introvert is, or people that even are more extrovert and get their energy from others, people have their limits. It's very rare that anyone is 100% introverted, 100% extroverted. We all need some downtime sometimes. And I found that I have the most to contribute to events, and my clients have had the most to contribute to their events when we take that amount of time. It could be, let's say, 15 minutes before a 1 hour event and then another 15 minutes to decompress. It could maybe be an hour or two before, depending on how much energy is being exercised during that event. And it does kind of come with a bit of trial and error. So I have a lot of different tactics, but I'd say that's definitely one of the notable ones.
That's one I used without even realizing that it's something that I use. Mine is about 24 hours, usually, because most of my events I host, I put on, they're all day events, and people don't understand how much energy it requires to put on an event. It's like the day before or the couple of days before, I'm like, I just need to kind of veg out. I need to watch me some Netflix. I need to relax and not do anything. And so that gives me the energy to be there for the entire day. Now, that was excellent. You mentioned your book. What day does your book come out?
So it's actually the first day of pre-sale was yesterday, June 1st.
Okay.
So it's available for pre-sale at stephanietomo.com/products/books. I can share the link later, but it will officially be on Amazon the week of June 15th. So book it and paperback.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. We have to definitely check that out. Now, I want to introduce our next guest. And she is an expert in helping people like yourself, Stephanie. I don't know if you went through a company or not, but our next guest, Megan Stevenson, helps entrepreneurs, experts, and thought leaders with book proposals. Good morning, Megan. How are you?
And I had to unmute, so less than that. hello, Tuesday morning. I'm doing wonderful. Thank you so much for having me on.
You are so welcome. I already see you're going to be very interesting, a lot of fun. So we'll see. Let me go back to you help entrepreneurs and experts and thought leaders come up with their book proposals.
Yeah. Yeah. So a book proposal is a little different than it's traditionally in the big publishers. So what we think of as what's in Barnes & Noble, like pre-self-publishing. So houses like Penguin Random House, Simon & Schuster, HarperCollins, Hachette, what we call the big five. So these are traditional publishers. So let's say you're an author like Stephanie and you have a great idea. There are kind of two routes to take. You can take a traditional book publishing route, which is what I specialize in, or you can go self-publishing. I don't really touch self-publishing anymore. I used to. I only work with a few select authors who want to do that. Because as I like to say, there's a lot of self in self-publishing. You basically have to be a really great project manager to do it successfully, unless you're partnering with a company, in which case you're still paying to play, right? The traditional publishing model, which a lot of my clients want because they want that imprimatur of Random House, does require a book proposal rather than a full manuscript. So I have a lot of clients come to me with, like, you know, 100,000 words, and I'm like, we're going to scrap that, basically, or we're going to tear it apart, or we're going to restart. And so I help people do that. It's very similar, the book proposal, to a business plan, but it's unique to publishing. And I've been a nonfiction editor for 15 years. So I just know the book proposal inside and out. It's a very strange and unique document. So I help my entrepreneurs craft that. And as an online entrepreneur myself, I mean, I could talk about sales funnels all day. So we're talking about it in terms of, like, how that book works as a lead magnet, what their audience is like, what the publisher wants, because publishers don't really get online entrepreneurship, and how we can kind of meet in the middle in terms of what they have to offer.
That was very interesting. And I got to break that down into more information, into more bites that I can take. You mentioned the self-publishing as opposed to going the route with the book proposal. What are some of the benefits of the book proposal as opposed to just saying, you know, I'm going to self-publish my book?
So publishers have a ton. I'm a big proponent of traditional publishing. I mean, I came up in that area. I was an editor. Publishing is full of people that love authors and love books. And there's a big misnomer out there. They're just trying to make money, or they're just trying to, like, reject everybody. And that's just not true. They need to make a profit. There are very thin margins in publishing. So for every Rachel Hollis or Mark Manson, there are literally thousands of authors that just for whatever reason, their books don't sell. So I'm a big proponent of traditional publishing because they have distribution, which self-publishing doesn't have. They have the entire power of a big publishing house, which means they've got editors, they've got publicity and marketers, they've got cover designers, they've got interior designers. And as a traditionally published author, you'd have someone like me on your side. You'd also have a literary agent to watch out for your legal, any legal issues, your best interest, basically, as a business person, just like, you know, an actress would have an agent or a manager, or like a music act, you know, Beyonce's got her managers, right? So that's all kind of set up in that model, in terms of the traditional publishing model. They also pay you to write your book in that model. So like the money is structured differently, right? So like someone like Stephanie, who's self-publishing, would have to put a lot of money up front to sell their book. And then whatever profit they get all of it or some more of it, right? But in the traditional publishing model, and this can get really deep and really complex, but like at a very surface level, the traditional publishing model, they pay you an advance on earnings. And so, you know, you would get some money up front, and then you're basically a business partner with the publisher on your book.
Now, that sounds wonderful. It sounds like obviously the way to go. But one of the things that I've seen and that I've learned from other people who are considering that option is that many of the publishers want you to already have a following. In order for them to even consider your book or consider your proposal, one of the most important aspects is your following. So I always ask the question, if I have a following, if I already have 1 million followers or 100,000 followers or whatever the criteria is, at that point, why not just sell the book directly to the following that I've gained without the publisher, as opposed to going to the publisher and utilizing their distribution?
That's a super good point. I mean, honestly, I always ask people when I used to help more self-published authors, I'd say, how good of a project manager are you? Because if you're a really good project manager, or if you have someone on your team that's an awesome project manager, then by all means, go with God, right? But otherwise, like, I will also tell my clients that I'm the most anti-DIY person that mm-hmm. you could possibly imagine. If mm-hmm. I can throw money at something, I will. Whether that's building a sales funnel, cleaning my house, walking my dog, grooming my dog, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Like, even like my clothes, right? I'll get Trunk Club to pick them up for me, right? So like, I will do all of that. And if you are a busy entrepreneur and you have built a business that has this million people following or this really big following, you ain't got that time to project mm-hmm. manage your book. So you would much rather pay someone like me to come in and sort of like whip it up. And I get really inside my clients' businesses too. I know what's going on inside. And so I can tell the difference between what's happening on their inside of their business and what their public persona is, and then create their book. So it sits somewhere nicely in between. My client, Rachel Rogers, calls it scalable intimacy. And so when you're reading her book, you're thinking, wow, like I'm getting a really insider view. And you are, but you aren't, right? You are, but you're not inside. You don't know what her coaches know. You don't know what her VIP clients know, but you've got this little window into their world, which is what's really important there. And you've got enough on the entrepreneur side, you've got a taster. So I always compare a book to like the gelato shop, right? Where like you go into the gelato shop and they give you that tiny, tiny spoon, right? Your lead magnets, your opt-ins, all your free stuff is that tiny little spoon. The book is like the sad lady pint, you know, the single serve. Yeah, it's the sad lady pint, right? It's a $15 sad lady pint. And so you have enough there to be satisfied, but usually people want the whole damn pint and then they want the gallon, right? So they go further up into your funnel, and the book is just one piece of that. And when we look at that, rather than seeing it as the end of the funnel, as the most biggest offer you're gonna make, we see it as one step in the process. And then it's a lot more palatable, frankly, for an author, an entrepreneur to think, I'm going to outsource this. I'm going to get a business partner, just like you would get a business partner to design your opt-in.
Well, that was wonderful. I love your little ditties, like your little stories, your little, the pint and all of that. It's incredible. I love it. And I'm just, like, you and I, we're two peas of this, in the same pod. Like I'm anti-DIY. Like I am not going to try it. Someone was passing around this meme or this photo on social media, and it was this outdoor canopy tent kind of thing, and they were like, oh, it's DIY, here are the instructions, and it was so beautiful. And I said, mine would never look like that ever. It would be one side would be leaning to the left, and this pole, I'm like, what do I need this pole for? Did I finish? It's like, oh, that's what the pole is for. And so I don't even try anymore. I'm like you, everything, the laundry is delivered, the food is delivered, like I don't even want to try, you know. That's very interesting. But I do want to go ahead, even though I have more questions for you, and introduce our next guest. Our next guest, you'll be surprised to know that he is here to speak to you about a business a lot of people have questions on, someone that you may think is some guy in the back alley somewhere, but he's here to break some more myths. I think we're breaking myths today. I'm going to introduce Mr. Brandon Bach, and he is a founder of Indigo Gardens, which specializes in cannabis cultivation. Good morning, Brandon. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. How are you?
I'm fine. Did you like the introduction?
Oh, that was a very nice introduction. Thank you very much.
It's like you just have, sometimes you just imagine just cannabis. It's like, oh, it's some guy in, you know, in the alley, and he's standing there like, hey, come here. You know what I mean? So tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do, Brandon.
I'm a cultivator of both native outdoor soil cannabis and fully controlled environment cannabis in the state of Oregon. We're located in Southern Oregon, where the sun shines hot, above 100 degrees during the summer, during the day, and the fall nights are quite cool and can come down to 40 degrees. And those fluctuations are very important to stress the cannabis plant and bring the best out of them. And that's why I'm a Bostonian who's doing business in Southern Oregon.
You're a Bostonian who's doing business in Southern Oregon. Wow, that has to be interesting.
I hate flying. That's interesting.
How did you get into this business, though?
I've been in the business for 20 years.
20 years? You look about 25. I mean, is it the hat? Or if ladies, am I alone? Like, everybody just left me alone here with Brandon.
I'm 40.
Wow. Drinking that water, Brandon. You go, Brandon.
Yeah. I drink about 5 liters a day. And I consume a bit of cannabis, and I think both, keep me moving and grooving, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So with Indigo Gardens, what is your specific area of focus? Like, I know you cultivate.
So we have two areas of focus. We have two product lines, essentially. Our first product line is our controlled environment flower that everybody is used to getting in their little Ziploc bag and packing in their bowl or rolling their joint. Our flower is considered to be some of the finest flower in the world. There are other amazing producers out there that produce fine flower. Oregon is a very competitive market, the most competitive flower market in the world. And we've hung tough through ups and downs in commodity prices. So we have our controlled environment smokable flower that is branded Indigo Gardens. And then we have our outdoor harvest, which is a full-term native soil grown, biologically driven agricultural model that produces the highest terpene content cannabis for fresh frozen extraction. So we harvest our plant, and within 15 minutes of harvest, it's frozen at negative 40 degrees Fahrenheit. When somebody has a bag of weed in their bag and you smell the weed from their bag, you're consuming volatile terpenes that have become gaseous. And so you're literally consuming molecules, cannabis molecules, when you smell the cannabis in somebody else's bag, because these terpenes volatilize at room temperature. And so instead of the cannabis losing all of these volatile chemicals through the drying process and then all the other handling after that. We preserve all these volatile chemicals immediately after harvest. And our clients are high-end processors. So people who make vape cartridges, but very specialized vape cartridges. Most vape cartridges are not made with fresh frozen material. And also very high-end dabs, if you are may or may not be familiar with cannabis concentrate consumption, very high-end cannabis concentrates. We sell our biomass to other businesses who then make a product, but put our brand on that product. So all products are co-branded because of our specialty cultivation methods. Consumers chase our product.
Wow. I learned a lot. I had no idea about any of that. I had absolutely no idea. So it's an opportunity for me to learn. So that's great. Now, you mentioned Oregon. Now, if memory serves me correctly, Oregon is one of the first places to completely legalize marijuana, correct or incorrect?
If I'm not mistaken, it was the third to go fully recreationally legal. Yeah.
Yes. What are some of the things that you've seen in Oregon since that time?
Be more specific, please.
I'm never specific. I'm always completely vague, so someone can take it and run with it anywhere they want to go.
I can speak about cannabis for days on end, which there are other guests on the show.
Okay, but I've seen articles, and I'm in California, so I get all of this. But I've seen articles about how it has increased, because more people are paying and. That you've been able to make Oregon better, that you've been able to utilize some of the resources to benefit the state.
I don't know how the tax resources are really being spent. That is not my concern as a producer. My concern is making sure that the tax structures are such where the consumer can get a high quality product for a low price. What the bureaucrats in the messed up political situation that Oregon is, how they use those monies, it would probably depress me to know how they're using those monies. I would guess they're using them improperly, like most politicians and bureaucrats use our money.
Let me rephrase the question. Okay. We don't need Brandy going off this morning. Okay. But it has to have changed the environment in that now people have the ability to do what they may have only done in the past, in secret, in hiding.
Oregon, cannabis was decriminalized, if I'm not mistaken, in the 70s.
Okay.
It was decriminalized. And most people in New York, because I do a lot of living in New York, most people in New York, when they get their Cali bud on the black market, I would say 50%, up to 50% of that Cali black market bud is in fact Oregon bud that was cultivated illegally in Oregon. And so Oregon, you may or may not have heard of the Emerald Triangle in Northern California, which consists of Humboldt, Mendocino, and Trinity counties. But really, Emerald Triangle cannabis is cultivated between Sonoma County and Roseburg, Oregon, which is basically the northern city in southern Oregon. Because if you look at satellite images on Google, you'll see that the topography is a continuous topography. There just happens to be some political line that was put in that California's here, Oregon's here. But topographically, it's the same growing region. And so there is still a massive amount of black market cannabis being grown in Southern Oregon. And it's that black market cannabis culture that enables my business to thrive, because all of the people I work with, my team, has all come from that culture. And black market cannabis culture is the culture that understands how to produce a product that the consumer wants and is willing to pay for a second time after they consume it. Most of my competitors who have not been in the cannabis industry for decades can't figure out why, with their million-dollar marketing programs, consumers won't purchase their product for a second time. And so Southern Oregon is a very special place when it comes to cannabis cultivation, yet it's not recognized as such. The credit usually goes to Northern California.
Well, I'm in California, so I like taking credit for stuff we don't do, but that's
just... And there's and some of the best cannabis comes from Northern California, no question about it. Southern Oregon just it just never gets the credit.
Okay, we're going to give you some credit. I'm giving you some credit right here today on the Roundtable Talk Show.
And the Southern Oregonian, the black market guys, they hate guys like me because I'm paying my taxes. But, you know, I do love the climate there.
Come down here and visit us. We'll have more of a conversation on Cali. Now, sure. I'm going to go, stay with me, Brandon. Don't leave me. But I'm going to go back to Megan, because one of the things that I always wonder is, like, can you make a story out of anything or anyone? Like, we have Brandon who's like, hey, we have to get more, you know, credit for what we do. Like, could you literally spin that into a book?
Yeah, I could, for sure. Actually, my brother and sister-in-law both illegally grew weed in Humboldt County for a while, and then my brother-in-law just started a hemp business in Chattanooga, Tennessee. So I'm very familiar with marijuana cultivation, actually. And I just sent my husband a link to your business, Brandon, because I'm sure he will go look for it at the copious amounts of marijuana dispensaries here in Seattle. So I always say that actually I just sent out an email around this, because so in terms of what traditional publishers want and readers want, because the reader is the end consumer, even though they're not, you know, my end consumer, is a good book that works. I mean, I work on all prescriptive nonfiction, so it's, or 90% prescriptive nonfiction. So that's how to, so self-help, personal growth, all these sort of things. Stephanie's book is probably definitely prescriptive nonfiction. And in that world, they want something that works, right? If you bought a book about confidence and it didn't teach you how to be confident, it doesn't work. And where authors become successful, like Brandon said, is like building up that brand, building up that trust, giving something somebody works, and then you're more willing to go further up the funnel or buy the second book or whatever that is. So that is really important. I always say that I can fix editorial. If you come to me with an idea and it's poorly executed, as a ghostwriter or collaborator, I don't make up ideas. If I did, I would be a fiction writer, right? But so someone can't come to me and say, I don't have an idea, create an idea for me. That doesn't work. But if you come to me with an idea, but no one knows who you are, then platform I can fix. You can grow a following. All of us know that, right? We're all entrepreneurs. In fact, when people come to me with nothing, I say, how do you feel about making your own business? Because you have to have something else to support it. Because from a publisher's point of view, you know, we're all facing this as entrepreneurs and marketers, in that there is so much freaking noise. How do you cut through all this noise, right? How do you get your how do you find your people? How do you bring them to your product or your service? And that is a problem for publishers as well, right? They're competing with thousands of other books. They're competing with YouTube. They're competing with TikTok. They're competing with all these things for your attention. So, you know, you have to find a way to demonstrate to them that you're going to cut through the noise, because otherwise it's a waste of their time, right? Because books are, at the end of the day, are a product. So I always say I can fix editorial. I can make you write better. I can fix your grammar. I can get you to shut up about stuff that nobody cares about but you. You know, I can tone down some rhetoric. You know, I can identify the chip on your shoulder about Southern Oregon and Northern California and take it down a notch or pull it up a notch, right? For PR purposes, we want you to be like, fuck Northern California, right? So like, this is a big deal.
I really love NorCal, and I cut my commercial cannabis teeth back in Humboldt County, in Garberville, on Alder Point Road. So I have much love in my heart for Northern California. It's just the market at large needs to understand that quality cannabis also comes from Southern Oregon.
I love Southern Oregon. Ashland is one of my favorite places in the world. So
I was just in Ashland a few days ago.
Love it. I love driving through Siskiyou over the pass there. But yeah, so what it is like, I can fix that, right? I can tell you, and there's other people that can tell you, you know, business coaches, that sort of thing, how to grow a platform. That's not crazy, especially if you will pay to play. It's not impossible, right? And I can tell you, like, we could say, you know, if I was working with someone like Brandon, just because I know the most about him at this point, I could say, okay, hey, like, let's differentiate you from all these other cultivators. Let's educate your audience. Let's, you know, if you're writing a book about how to grow pot in your backyard, which I'm pretty sure that book already exists, but whatever. If it doesn't, somebody should write it. But like, if you're going to do that, let's look at that. And what do your clients need and what's in the book and what's not? Because there is a definite point between like what's in the book and what's not. Like I describe it almost like a house. Like your business is a house. All the free stuff is out in the yard. Your book is like in the stuff that you usually keep clean in case guests pop over, right? Your living room, your kitchen, maybe your bathroom, right? So like your book lives there, and then everything that you get paid for, the bulk of your income, you know, your VIP products, your one-on-ones, your courses, all that stuff's upstairs, you know. And then we can get into the analogy further. I love me an analogy, Sharifa. I'm sure you can tell.
I can tell, but no, it makes it fun. It makes it interesting. I love all of those aspects. So I'm gonna go over to Galit, because Galit, I don't know why. I do stuff on shows and it just comes to me. The spirit just moves me. But for some reason, I feel like helping Brandon today. He doesn't even need my help or our help, but we gonna help Brandon today, right? So Brandon has made all his millions in cannabis cultivation. He is the millionaire on the show today. I don't know if you all are millionaires too, but we gonna pick on Brandon. So Galit, now that he has his millions, what does he need to focus on financially?
Financially, it's allowing his millions to make more millions for him. So giving all of his, each dollar a job. Your money wants to work for you. And so it's really about finding the place that you want to put it and where it can make the most for you, because that's how you develop generational wealth, right? That's what we're going for. It's great that you can like live a really good life today, but you want to make sure that you can have that money come during a time when, I don't know, a world pandemic hits and you have, you know, you need a little buffer to lean on. And you want to be able to leave something for your family or your friends or your community. So it's really about identifying the best places. And sometimes it's really about identifying the places that matter to you. And putting your money to work there. And sometimes that's, you know, investing in other cannabis companies or investing in development in third world countries or some other cause, and being able to make your money work for you there and just constantly growing your empire. So I think you're well on your way to doing it.
If anybody wants a tip on where to put a little bit of money, well, it's gonna have to be a little bit more than a little bit, but Southern Oregon water rights at the moment, and I'm hollering this from the treetops, because of laws and how water rights are constructed in Oregon, Southern Oregon water rights are going to be the future Napa Valley. Something just happened.
No, it's okay.
It's gonna be the future Napa Valley. And so if you can acquire water rights that are associated with exclusive farm use land in Southern Oregon, in the future it might be worth more than what you paid for it.
Did you see, like, Brandon, the way he said that? He said it's so politically correct. Like, it might be. You know, there's a possibility it could.
No insider trading here. I'm giving you my personal.
I do own Southern Oregon water rights. That being said, I'm not selling them anytime soon. So this is not a pump and dump.
We got you. We on the same page. We understand, Brandy. But it was interesting when Galit was speaking and she was talking about, you know, a pandemic may hit. And what was interesting to me, again, being in Long Beach, California, they like shut everything down. But the dispensaries, they are essential. You know,
mm-hmm. we are. Yeah, we are an essential business. We're an essential business in every state that has legal cannabis, except Massachusetts, where only medical is essential and recreational has been shut down. But yeah, it's a pretty big deal at the moment.
Yes, I was surprised. I can't get my hair done, but if I wanted to smoke, I can. That's essential. But I mean, hey, I've seen things change. They changed the law where you can go and pick up alcohol and take it home. I had never in my life seen a law or something change that fast. But I was like,
well,
the
city of San Francisco is actually giving cannabis, methadone, and alcohol to homeless people who are residing in hotels.
Oh wow! I feel like I should know this.
giving it away for free.
Wow.
I don't. I'm not going to say whether I agree or disagree with that, but that's controversial.
It is controversial. I mean, anxiety reduction. I think that what it all comes down to is during a global pandemic, how do you cope? I mean, mm-hmm. just going on that sort of personal development like track, substances do help some people, but I don't know, what are our thoughts on other methodologies or do you view marijuana as self-help?
I think it can be. I mean, I definitely think it's there's definitely been obvious evidence that medicinal marijuana helps. I am huge. I'm not big into smoking. Like, I prefer wine, frankly. I am that basic bitch. But it's true.
Come on, come back, Megan. Come on back now. You hear?
But CBD, I am a huge proponent of. Like, I love my CBD vape pen. I'm a runner. I love my CBD tinctures and my the oils and all of that. So I definitely see why it's essential. I mean, state by state, essential businesses are very questionable. The WWE is essential in Florida, right? They got professional wrestling making it essential in Florida. So it's all like...
relative.
It's
yeah, I definitely think there is something to be said about making sure that we look at this for its medicinal purposes, because it does have medicinal purposes. And it's not just, you know... it's not just people trying to get high. Sometimes there's, you know, like a real medical necessity for it. And that's why we have medicinal marijuana. And frankly, you know, I believe that it should have been brought to the market earlier, because it could have helped a lot of people that went deep into opioids, which were totally legal and given by doctors and really screwed people up a lot. We have a huge problem in the country, and it could have been solved by something that's, you know, grown from the ground. And well, not that opioids, it's also poppy, but it
those go through a little bit more of a process,
a little bit more of a chemical process, and a little bit more of a, you know, this is like something natural that is used and can be used to really help people, and help people in a way that doesn't necessarily cause them permanent damage down the line. I have really strong feelings about it, because I had spinal surgery and I was given crazy amounts of painkillers, and I thank God every day that I didn't get addicted to them. But I did, my body did suffer because of it. I have to take probiotics every day. It killed all the good bacteria in my stomach. It was like a really painful process for many years. And I almost wish that there had been another option for me that wouldn't have caused like long-term damage to my body. And I think that that's something that, you know, we're seeing more and more that medical marijuana is being used for. I mean, I just thought about like last week, I decided I was gonna go pick up CBD, for my dog, because he's getting older now and he has achy joints, and you know,
are you using human CBD? Is it marketed for humans or is it marketed for dogs?
Marketed for dogs.
I would recommend using products that are marketed for humans.
Really? Because there's more testing or
yeah, like a lot of CBD products have been tested and have no CBD in them. The Chinese are making an isolate using yeast, and that has nothing to do with cannabis. And if you do not have trace amounts of the other cannabinoids that were manufactured by the plant in the product, it will not have the efficacy of something that is, you know, has the trace amounts. Mind you, you can put undecarboxylated THC, a cream, on an infant, and the infant, there would be no psychoactivity. It would just purely work for their, you know, their muscles or their diaper rash or what have you. So when you're coming from like an ointment standpoint, and I don't know about your job and the testing associated with your job and those types of things, but when it comes from like purely a psychoactive standpoint, you're better off using a high THC cream, whether it's pain, whether it's an abrasion, a burn, a nice balance between THC and CBD in the cream. Will most likely mean that there's also high amounts of other cannabinoids that they're not necessarily testing for, but have great value according to anecdotal evidence and experience.
You're such a wealth of knowledge, Brandon. You were going to answer Stephanie's original question about self-help. Yeah.
Was I?
You started to say something, and Galit started to talk. And so I wanted your response to Stephanie's. I'm paying attention. I don't know if anybody else.
You know, I will say, over the years, my short-term memory has been impaired.
I don't know why, but that's why I like five guests. I'm like, there was a question. Stephanie asked it.
You're on
Stephanie,
it.
Stephanie, do you remember your question?
Yes, and it was open to pretty much anyone that wanted to answer it. I was bringing it back to the idea of being in a global pandemic and how we relieve anxiety and different holistic methodologies, and then how cannabis fits in and as kind of one of the tools in the toolkit.
I'll actually go back to what Galit said very quickly, and because I wanted to mention something. So there are many terpenes and many chemicals in cannabis. One of those smell chemicals is myrcene. High myrcene cannabis concentrates are an amazing way for people to wean themselves off opiates. And again, I know this from anecdotal evidence and my experience with watching other people. When it comes to the global pandemic and things like anxiety, you know, of course, being in good physical shape and being in a good mental space, I think is most important. Because if all your systems in your body are working and flowing really well, chances are you're going to have a really good outlook on things. And if things like the pandemic have maybe destroyed your business and your family is, you know, at risk and all of these things, well, at the end of an extremely stressful day, to hopefully enable rest for the next stressful day, imbibing with cannabis may help.
You should be a politician, Brandon. Like, I'm telling you, you got the spirit of a politician just right in there. Because it is like, you gotta, you know, if you have to listen to what Brandon says and what he doesn't say and when he gives recommendations, I'll answer your question, Stephanie, and specifically in regards to self-help. And I do believe that people use it for self-help, but I don't have a problem with self-help. If a person has the ability to recognize the signs that they are feeling anxiety, they're feeling depression, they're feeling these emotions, why not take something yourself that will help you in these situations? Because if you go to get some help from somewhere else, what are they going to do? They're going to give you pills. That's what they're going to do. They're going to say, oh, you're depressed, take this pill. You're sad, take that pill. So why not take something that you're not going to have any effects the next day? You're going to be clear-headed, and as opposed to walking outside and doing something that might, you know, harm somebody else or harm yourself, why not stay inside? Take something that's going to help you, that's going to relax you. And that's just my opinion on the same thing.
And if you want to have that clear day afterwards, mm-hmm. not all cannabis will necessarily give you that clear day afterwards. Mm-hmm. People talk about a cannabis hangover, and that mostly has to do with the different terpene profiles of the cannabis that the person is consuming. If you're going to be consuming that very high myrcene, which I just recommended for, you know, people who want to get off opioids, you may experience a little bit of a fogginess the next day if you're consuming super high myrcene cannabis or beta-caryophyllene cannabis, where if you want to smoke a little pinene, same stuff that you smell when you walk through a pine forest, or limonene from the lime, and these are all in cannabis, you may have a very clear day the next day. Just so people have a better understanding. And as I always tell people, when it comes to consuming and purchasing cannabis, go with your nose. Your nose knows. Just like some people crave bananas and other people crave chocolate and other people crave peanut butter, there's a reason why, and there's physiological reasons why. And so go with the cannabis that is most yummy to you.
Wow, I've never heard any of that. The high mercy, I've never heard, nobody talks like that. Brandy, I need you to come down here and give a speech, work with Stephanie. She'll help the introvert confidence, all of that if you're introverted, okay? But people need to learn more about these things. I've never heard any of those. Not that I
well,
should.
I've made it my mission since starting this business to educate the consumer, the bud tender, who is the only person that deals with the consumer at the point of sale, and investors, because I see investors making very poor choices and losing millions and tens of millions and hundreds of millions of dollars. And I see consumers purchasing the wrong product for them. And so it's those three individuals, the consumer, the bud tender, and the investor, that need to be most educated about the cannabis plant and cannabis consumption.
You educating people though? I want to read your blog or your video or tune in to learn more. I got to read your book. Like, how are you getting this education out?
I spend most of my time working on water rights. but I do skim that Haro where I found you, Sharifa.
Yes.
And because I'm looking to be an authority figure when it comes to cannabis information, because so much cannabis information is incorrect and so much cannabis reporting is misleading and incorrect. And so many people with my background are still in the shadows and they still are under the canopy of the redwoods. And other business people who have brands like myself, they're just business people and they would have been in real estate if it wasn't for them seeing the green rush, as they call it. And these people can speak to cannabis as well as a used car salesman can speak to a 98 Camry, you know?
Well, I'm going to follow your journey because I would love to learn more. I would love to hear more because you are very interesting. All my guests are very interesting today. We learned a lot. We laughed a lot. And that's what we do here at the Roundtable Talk Show. Now, what I love to do at the end of every show is just allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who's watching live, as well as everyone who's watching the show in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance. So, Stephanie, we're going to start with you.
Oh, sure. Okay, so hello. What I'd like everyone to take away, I kind of went over them a little bit earlier, but I guess something new that I'll come away with is... yeah, if you identify as introverted, if you're feeling some anxiety, it's not the same as not having the ability to feel confident. And I have a slew of different holistic ways to get there. A lot of mindset works and tactics that I'm excited to share at a later time. And if you're interested in the book, there are meditations. I didn't mention that I'm a meditation instructor in addition to a career coach. And yeah, you can feel free to learn more at Stephanie Thoma. That's StephanieThoma.com/products/book.
Wonderful. I love it. Galit, what do you have for us?
All right. Yeah. So I guess the last nugget of wisdom that I want to share is something I share all the time with my clients of don't worry if you're starting small. Do not wait until you have a lot. Do not wait until you have a big chunk of money. Start small every day, even if it's, I have my clients literally start savings accounts with $5, $5 a week, automatic transfer from a checking account into a savings account and just let it ride. And then if you haven't felt that, if it didn't hurt your wallet, if you're still paying your bills, then add another $5 transfer. Just keep it regular. Keep it these small amounts that won't hurt you, and you'll be saving or investing way more than you thought possible in no time. The other thing is pay yourself first. And that's like one of the ways that I do it. You really want to make sure that everybody else is going to hound you for their money. So don't worry, they'll get paid. But every time you get paid, make sure that you take a little bit something off the top of that and put it first towards you, towards your future, towards a goal that you're saving towards, whatever it is that's important to you, put it towards that first. Because if you wait until the end, everybody else is gonna just drain that. There's always gonna be some other thing that you're gonna need to buy or some tchotchke that you saw, and it's never gonna go to something that's really important to you. So make sure that you prioritize you and your goals and don't wait. Don't wait until you have a lot. A lot of people just wait until, oh, I have a big chunk of money, then I'm going to save. No, start today. And you can still, I see my clients every day saving through this pandemic, $1 at a time, $5 at a time. It doesn't matter if you're taking small steps, you're still moving forward. So I think that's the biggest things that I wanted to share. And if you need any help, you can check out my website, financialsharkdress.com, on Instagram, financial_sharkdress. And I give out free money tips every Money Monday on my Facebook page.
I love it. I thought you were going to say, I give out free money. And then I was like, oh, I'm there. Let me tune in. I'll make some of
that free money. It might as well be free money for the amount of money that my clients have made.
I love it. Megan, what do you have for us?
Of course. So I think there's a book in most people. I think that a lot of people want to write a book, and I would never dissuade them from doing it. That being said, I do think that you should get educated about the differences between self-publishing and traditional publishing so that you really make an informed choice on what you want to do. Like Galit and probably everyone else here, I have a ton of free stuff. So you can join my email list at meganstevenson.com. I have some pretty banging opt-ins, if I do say so myself. I also go on Instagram Live every Wednesday, and I mostly talk about platform and audience building. So if that's a concern for you, you can join me. It's every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, which is my time zone. And yeah, I actually have a platform builders bootcamp that is going to be opening up here in about 2 weeks that I'm really, really excited about. And it's going to help people that have a great book idea, but that no one knows who they are yet, get that platform built and that audience rolling. So if that's you, come on over. You can visit it on my website, meganstevenson.com. I think it's /platform builders. If it's not /, try /, for platform builders. And you can also check me out at Megan Stevenson Books on Facebook, although my Instagram is so much better. And you get cute dog videos there too. So, and thank you, Sharifa, for having me on. It was super nice to meet everybody.
You are so welcome. Thank you for joining us. Brandon, go ahead and take us out.
Well, I don't have anything free for anybody because that would I would be violating criminal law. I gave anything out for free. But you can always find my concentrate products and flower products at most dispensaries in Oregon. And go with your nose knows, and THC percentage on flower really means nothing when it comes to quality. Your nose knows.
I love it. I love today. It was great. A lot of information share. I learned a lot. I have to call some of my guests in the future when I start making decisions. I'm going to start saving, thinking about another book. I just put out a book, published a book last year, Signs You Might Be an Entrepreneur, How to Discover the Entrepreneur in You. And so I'm thinking about putting out another book. I definitely talked to Megan about that. And Brandon and Stephanie, Khalid, you are all so amazing. I want to thank you for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I want to thank everyone who tuned in live to watch the show, as well as everyone who's watching it in the archives. We definitely appreciate your support. Go ahead and share this show, but take a look at the post, read the descriptions, visit the websites of our guests. They provided a lot of information just for you. And if you're interested in being a guest, please visit the website at asksharifah.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific time, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Thanks, Sharifah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.